seems a pity to miss such a good pudding.
Hello and welcome to Euro Pudding. Euro Pudding is the European Screenwriters podcast about writing and producing better TV in Europe with weird accents. My name is Pierre Puget. I'm a French writer based in Berlin.
And hi, I'm Philip Scherzer. I'm a German writer. I'm also based in Berlin.
And happy New Year.
Yeah, happy New Year to all of you. And yeah, just to let you know, this podcast is still made by Sean in 2021, the Serialized Alumni Network. We represent screenwriters and producers from all over Europe who went through the Serialized Writing Program in Berlin. And if you want to know more about our writers, our producers, members, Sean, Serialized, just check our website. It's www.seantv.net.
SeanTV.net, and this is where you contact us. You write us a message if there's like some topics you want to us to talk about. If you have questions, and of course, if you are now on your app, please go like, subscribe, leave some stars, and leave a comment if you can on iTunes, on the iTunes store. That helps a lot. Well, we said Happy New Year. Of course, for us, we're still in December. We're still in the horrible year of 2020. Of course, I have little hope that suddenly, because we're the 1st of January, it will suddenly be magically solved. But, we want to say thank you for listening. We've been seeing the numbers grow slowly and with some surprising stuff. Like, we have like a lot of people listening in Hungary. We have still some people in New Zealand. Last week, there was someone in Peru listening to us. We don't know why you do it, but we are really happy to have you.
And of course we know why, because we're good.
Well, but, European TV series. But yes. So thanks a lot. Of course, this podcast never intended for it to be like that, with a lot of things online. It was supposed to be more a festival thing where we meet people. Of course, the year has decided otherwise, but we're really happy that you still found us. And we will keep doing it, hopefully with a bit more regularity. But, we have to deal with our own lives and work.
Yeah, but, definitely.
it's really fun to do, and we're really happy for any feedback you have. So yes, please, thank you. Well, then let's have the discussion for our first podcast of the year, a conversation about deli soaps. Hello and welcome in the pudding, Kirsten Itterhagen. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
Hello.
Very exciting. Hi.
So right now you're in Berlin, right?
Yes.
But you travel a lot. You're around the world. Usually in a normal year, you're around the world a lot, and you live in LA quite often.
Yeah. So I was traveling pendling between LA and Berlin over the last 4.5 years. So I'm based in LA and Berlin, but thanks to COVID, I'm back in Berlin and working from here.
I know the feeling. I it's so weird. I haven't left Berlin since February, and this never happened to me.
It's a bit weird because we're all in Berlin right now, but we're all sitting in different rooms.
Yeah.
Well, the Euro Pudding is a very safe podcast.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. So for those who don't know you, let us just introduce you quickly. You started off in advertising, right?
And, yes.
But then you decided to kind of make that kind of way to become a writer. And then you started at Grandi Ufa and you became like everything, really. Storyliner, story editor, then later on head writer on popular long-running soap operas like Unter Uns, Among Us, Gute Zeiten, Schlechte Zeiten, Good Times, Bad Times, and also Verbotene Liebe, Forbidden Love.
I love all these titles. I have to say, I knew them already for years now I'm living in Germany, but all these titles are amazing.
You also have a lot of international experience, like over the years. You worked in Croatia, where you headed like the writer's room of the series Rose of the Wind. It was for Croatian RTL, right?
Yes.
And then you also developed the series The Mall, set in Dubai. And you went to Hungary as well and developed the TV series there Between Friends for UFA Serial Drama.
I was part of the writer's room there, helping them out, mm-hmm. Coming up with season arcs.
Ah, right.
It's a very long-running show in Hungary. Yeah. Our serialized colleague, Judith, has been working for that too. So we met there, yeah.
Interesting, really. And but over the past 10 years, you kind of also created a bunch of original TV series ideas. And the funny thing is, like, it's a bit sad that we're just audio, because I see the poster of the Alibi agency in your background.
Yeah.
And could you talk us a little bit about that, maybe?
It's kind of like, as you said, I started at the UFR like an intern. I did the Serienschule, the school, 15 years ago. And then it was kind of like from intern to showrunner. It's a little like this American dream in Germany, which you only can have in the daily drama industry in Europe. So, and then I came up in the end when I was head writing other daily dramas, I came up with my own original idea, Alibi Agency. I found in the UFA serial drama my home. So they helped me to produce it. And it was only the pilot, honestly, which was on TV, because it was part of the TV series Lab from ZDF Neo. It was a competition like Amazon started. So they showed a couple of three different pilots, and then the audience voted for the series they wanted to have on air. And unfortunately, I lost. So everything happens for a reason. So it took me to LA. And I found interest with my U.S. agent there. So I found my U.S. agent and I went for a year or 2 years there pitching it to Hollywood. And it's a 1 hour drama. It's a rom-com about an alibi agency. And it's set in an alibi agency that sells professional lies, from a little white lie to professional double lives. And it's a very cute rom-com about a young woman who was left at the altar and was cheated by her fiancé. And then she has a nervous breakdown. And then she finds out that this fiancé had help from an alibi agency guy. And then so she channeled her whole like disappointment and anger into that. And then she starts working undercover in that company to take revenge on this guy. And of course they fall for each other. So it's kind of a battle between a person that sells professional lies and make a living out of lies and some woman who advocates for the truth. So it would be supposed, you know, like being a fun rom-com, but it was just the pilot yet. So we will see.
Yeah, definitely. But it definitely sounds like a really fun project that I saw the trailer and it was really fun to watch, I have to say.
Thank you. Yeah.
you have two other interesting international series projects in development. One is called Nina and Tom, and the other one is called Love Has Won. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, maybe?
Yeah. It's not a top secret, but it's still in development. So Nina and Tom is the adaptation of a novel of Tom Kummer. So it's his auto-fictional biography, and Tom Kummer is a very famous author. He's from Switzerland, and he is well known for his scandal as a journalist in his 2000s when he lived in LA, and he wrote a lot of interviews with Brad Pitt and a lot of A-listers that he just made it up. Even when these interviews and was very, you know, were very entertaining and had a lot of truth in it, it was like, you know, in the journalist industry was a scandal. But his book, Nina and Thomas, about his own great love, Nina, and they were married for 30 years, and it's a very intense love story with very extreme characters, and it's super interesting and contemporary. So I was happy to jump on board for that project when a friend of mine, Holger Reibinger, he's a German producer for international news series, came up and said, do you want to develop this with me and create this? So that's still, we just finished the pilot. So we're going out next year with our US agents to Los Angeles, because it's more an international American project, because most of the story takes place in LA. And the other one, Love Has Won, is my original idea of mine. So it's a family drama. It's near future. It's about a revolution and change the world. It's more a compelling, hopeful, utopian vision of the new Earth. So it's very contemporary as well. So I came up with this idea over the last 2 years and then creating a collapse of the society. And then I found myself in the middle of this. So a lot of pictures in the media over the last year remember me on my own series. But I was, well, I'm lucky that David Jenkinson from C21, who starts to develop stuff as well, jumped on board and optioned and gave me development money. And we were supposed to write the pilot together this year. And but I hope that we're doing this next year and then we're going out to US networks with this. And then probably it's hopefully more, you know, very timely.
So what's interesting with these three projects is that they are all international and but started at least for the first one in more smaller scope in Germany. Yeah. And so I think that's very interesting. Is that, do you think because you are in such a special place, or is it because also the industry has changed and is more open globally to everyone wherever we are?
I don't know. I just can't speak for myself. So when I left to LA, it was 2015 when I met Roy Ashton, my my agent in the US, and pitched to him the Alibi agency. I came out of Germany where there were no serialized series on air. It was really the beginning of these golden age of TV for the German industry, and I was kind of frustrated that it was so heavy, difficult to get a serialized series on air. And in Germany, despite soap operas, you know, the issue we want to talk about. So I was very happy and lucky to work on soap operas, and because that's my passion, serialized storytelling and character-driven storytelling. And I tried to come up with my own series and there was no place for it. So this is why I went to the US and was just saying, okay, I'm just give it a try. And I was lucky to find someone who supports me. And this market at that time was way more open to serialized or hybrid with procedurals, with kind of like alibi cases. And I turned my back a little on the German industry. But then I watched from LA, you know, because I still work for soap operas in Germany and I'm still working on them so to make my money. But I'm super happy that people like the Haribos and, you know, Serialize opened the minds of the producers and networks. And then now we can have serialized TV series on in Germany as well.
So dive into our topic of today is that what we learn when we work in daily dramas, in soap operas, I completely, you know, can see why some, you know, American agents and American producers, by seeing your resume, even if in Germany you didn't have this like prime time serialized experience, but seeing like an extensive, you know, a successful soap experience for years is very strong, right? And that's why I wanted to talk about that in the podcast is there's still a kind of looking down at soap opera work from a lot of writers and people in the industry. But actually, like you said when we started talking, this revolution of serialization, working in team, learning the different ropes of different jobs in the production, all that was existing in Europe for years before, and years and years in daily soaps, especially in Germany, because the daily soaps are quite a big industry here, but also, I mean, for the people I know in France, you were talking about Hungary, so I know some people in Estonia who are working on soaps, and so it's... it is a very organized industry already, right?
It's super interesting because this pattern is very in Europe, or I can speak for Germany, is the closest thing to the American process. So when people say, I'm in a writer's room, and then there are sitting three people coming up with ideas for six episodes, 30 minutes, then I'm super happy and I'm very glad that it's coming up, that people are writing in groups and, you know, and do this and bring these series on air. But this is, for me, from my experience and from the viewpoint of the American process, it's not a writer's room, because a writer's room is six people, high-paced, plotting of TV series, of series, either like 23 network episodes and next season and next season, like, for example, like Grey's Anatomy, it's 24 episodes and is seasonal. So it's high paced producing and high paced plotting. And that, you know, like meets other crafts and talents into the writer's room. So for example, in a soap opera in Germany, when you have 30 minutes, you have to come up with your writer's room with 500 scenes a week. Just, and they have to make sense. They have to be compelling. They have to have like five great cliffhangers. They have in every episode, like three storylines. You have like 15 stories you have to come up. Even when you're breaking them down from season arcs, you're already prepared. But leading these talents and leading these writers and coming up with so much story, you really need really great writers. And I think they are in Germany and maybe in Europe very unappreciated, even when they are the most flexible, most creative, talented people I have seen so far working with.
It's good that you mentioned that, because it seems like also that a lot of successful TV writers, they actually come out of that kind of soap opera realm. Why do you think that is? Does it like do you learn the craft like better in a soap opera, or?
Yeah, so when it comes to serialized storytelling, you learn this there on the job. Serialized storytelling was in Germany already in the 60s, 70s, but then the America was bigger in the industry. So the networks, the German networks brought all the procedurals to, you know, and then the procedural got big. So we have Tatort, we have Back Doctor. So we have, you know, we have really successful German stories and series, but they are mainly procedural. They have a little serialized arc here and there, and they are strong, but they are just like 10% of the whole series. So the writers have been trained to come up with plot and not with character-driven stories. But the ones sitting in the writer's room of Good Times, Bad Times, and Among Us, Forbidden Love, they sit there from the beginning of the 90s, and the only thing they do is coming up with serialized storytelling about their characters. I think the interesting thing is that we have here with soap operas, the story engine, because that's kind of like a popular thing right now. Mm-hmm. Everyone is like, what's the story engine? This is coming from the panic that there's not enough plot, because we are so used to plot-driven formats and TV series. So everyone is like a little panicked that there's not enough story. But in soap operas, the engine are the characters. So the plot is only supporting the experience you want to put your characters into. And then either they change and they learn something, or they develop in a certain direction from good to evil, or from, you know, from, so whatever you decide your character needs to go to or what your concept needs. So I think these writers coming out of that kind of writer's rooms, they are used to really think about their characters in a psychological way, and they know what an arc is and what a development is. So they just have this in their blood, because they are doing this day by day and on a high pace. And other writers coming from procedurals, thinking about very complex crime plots, their brain is just wired in a different way. It's not that they are not able to do that. They need to learn the craft. At the same time, people coming from soap operas need to train their craft in coming up with like complex plots. where they throw their characters in. So it's a mix. So we come from both sides. So either way is a good way, but you have to learn the craft of the other side to come up with a series like Mad Men or The Crown, or so you have a complex plot or world, you put your characters in there, but the emotions and the the resonate your, when you want your audience to resonate emotionally, you have to come up with more compelling characters who go through a journey and have a development.
I really like this kind of opposition, or let's say complementarity, between characters and plot. What do you mean when you talk about like psychology of characters? Is it like with their arc? Do you mean like an arc that makes sense for what the show is about, or something realistic about psychology of characters? How do you know that you're going the right way, pushing a character more and more?
It all depends on what you decide about what your character needs to go, or do you want your character to go? So you're coming up with a story idea, or with a idea for a TV series like Walter White. So it's the premise is an ordinary guy turns into a master dealer and grows into his genius knee. And his being a genius because he has never been seen as a genius in his backstory. So when you want to tell this kind of story, you really have to dig deep into his psychology and coming up with this complex inner conflict of him and find the right plot world to show these inner conflicts. So it's very well constructed from a psychological point of view to find the right world for him so that you can show these character development. So because, in soaps or other TV series, you have like archetype characters, you have paradox characters who have a strong inner conflict. Of course, you work with cliche characters and break them and turn them upside down. So it depends on from what angle you're coming from. If you create Breaking Bad, you're coming from a character-driven angle. And it's well known for the first American very character-driven show after Sopranos. Sopranos was more an ensemble series. But when you come from a plot-driven world, you need to go from the world into the characters and see, okay, what kind of characters do I need? What kind of ensemble do I need to create this world and to support and serve with these characters and that development they are going through to tell the story about that world? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. But in a soap room, then you're dealing with like maybe, I don't know, 8-10 important main characters, right? It's an ensemble almost all the time, right? Do you decide how early is it decided what arcs of the character will be for the year? And I wonder what the moral or the theme that you want the show to bring into the audience, like it is something important, it's something that is talked about in the room extensively or not?
Yes, yeah, sure. Because, soap operas are very important in terms of being responsible for themes that are important in a society. So I can just talk about myself. So once I'm head writer, producer of a daily drama, I really try to look at themes which are very important right now because, like we had HIV stories, you have, of course, like gay stories, you have domestic violence, you have like things that there are, racism, sexism, all these themes were important for the audience, but which are they meant to experience with their characters they really love, that they are resonate with these stories, are much higher than, because these characters are their friends and their families. So, you know, for Good Times, Bad Times, there are a couple of characters like Gerna or Catherine, you know, like people, they know them for 20 years almost. So they are going home with them. And if this person or this character, for example, get raped, you're much more into that and you're much more compassionate about and then watching a movie or something, you know, like that's, you know, oh, I'm watching a movie about rape and it's horrible. But you know, when this happened to someone you love, like your favorite main character of your favorite soap opera you're watching for 20 years, it's like it's happening to your own sister or mother. So I think we, as a soap opera person, you have this chance to come up and play and talk and discuss themes which are very important. And in the beginning, we are sitting together and thinking about themes which are now important, and then we decide if we are putting new characters into our ensemble to represent that theme. Do we throw characters into, you know, for example, like rape or domestic violence stories? And then we go with them, and then we throw them in there, and then every story is different because every character is different. So the domestic violence story in Among Us is different to Good Times, Bad Times, because they are different characters with a different family. And and then we prepare these storylines beforehand. So every 3 months, the whole story team is sitting together and create the stories for the next 3 to 6 months. And then it's all written down like a manifest, you know, like there's the manifest, so that we have a guideline, which is, of course, talked with the network. So we are not going out with racism without talking to the networks. Everything is aligned with the networks. But then you have a manifest for the next 4 months, you know, for example. And then you're sitting in the writer's room and you're breaking it down day by day, episode by episode. Of course, you know, maybe you're changing the way, maybe you have a great idea, maybe a character, an actor is getting ill and you have to write this out and then you have to change the whole thing, but you have mainly a guideline and then you're breaking it down week by week. And then we're sitting together and then we have come up with new themes and
But I think that's really the fun in the process. I mean, when you have that manifest, that broad guideline, what you want to do with each character, for example.
Yeah.
And then once you go down to that day by day, so how does that look exactly in that character's life? What is he going to, or he or she like going to experience? And how this sometimes, you know, changes the whole trajectory sometimes a little bit. I mean, not the entire one, but how the experiences, like the character, or what the day-to-day the character goes through, how that sometimes, you know, changes that trajectory a little bit. That's what I find really, really interesting sometimes.
I think it depends on, because it's a manifest in the beginning, but then when you're breaking it down, it's like a puzzle, but it's a life. It's a being puzzle, because it changes because you are maybe on another storyline with another character, you're in another story, and then you're combining the story and then you suddenly sit there and think, yeah, but maybe it's better, it's more interesting and more entertaining or more emotional when another character of the ensemble is, you know, for example, just, you know, I just throw it in, it's like raping her, then someone else we thought before coming out of the, you know, like, you know, from the outer world. So sometimes you have like these ideas in the writer's room to combine or change the storylines. And then you have to deal with this because you can't go back. So you have to have like this living puzzle in the hand and you have to really like work with this, and it has a life itself, and it's coming up with ideas, and then writers coming up with ideas, and sometimes someone has this great idea and you just follow it, and then you have to work this through to the rest of it. And that's the challenge. And I think that's the fun, because that's the creative process. You're not sitting there like secretaries looking in the manifest and saying, okay, today this is this. It's like it's an open space, and you have to handle the living being of this story.
Which is exactly why it creates strong writers, because yeah. it's this mix, like what you just described, is the mix between having a very clear hierarchy. You have like boss, and you have people who decide stuff more important. At the same time, if you want to do your job in the best way, you have sometimes to offer different visions on these decisions, and you have to communicate, and it's all like this collaboration aspect.
Yeah, if you're a fresh writer. Coming in, I think the best idea is starting at a daily drama, because then you can practice, because you are working already with characters who are alive. You can watch them on screen. You see them. You know people who know these characters, so that you are able to put ideas out there in the writer's room when you're working with this living being of story, because it's so fast. Because in the same time where you are handling with this living puzzle, it's like a ticking clock. You have to come up with this 500 scenes in a week, because you can't go home if you don't have this finished. There's no way of going home, because, you know, on the other departments, they are waiting for it, and you can't stop because the whole engine is stopping, and that's a disaster. So the pressure sometimes helps to be creative, because that the adrenaline is pumping up and everyone is going crazy latest on Thursday, because everyone is so smashed in their brains. And from that point, in my experience, coming the best ideas, and then sometimes you're going crazy and then you throw everything under the bus and coming up with something new, and then you have to work with this living puzzle of story. And at the same time, you have to be aware, because this is what I think, which is very important, is to always think about your audience. It's like they love these characters. They are their friends. This is the people they go home for. And you have the chance to help them understand complex topics and issues through their characters, but at the same time, you're responsible for the message you put out there, because you have a big impact on them. So be responsible, because it's kind of like you have the power to change their mindset, good or bad, because maybe all these, you know, at the moment, all the three daily dramas on air in Germany and the Access Primetime have maybe 6 million people every day. So you can reach 6 million people every day, and then you can infiltrate them with your story, saying, so be aware what you put out there. And I think this is, for me, this most exciting and most rewarding feeling working for soap operas is not having the power over the minds, but I know I make them laugh. I make them laugh and laugh. I make them cry. I make them feeling something. I make them learn something. I make them feel alive, and I have a reason to go home too. And every evening when I go back home from work, I think this is such a rewarding feeling that you can reach people with your stories and make them feel something, especially in time of COVID or other times. And that makes me very happy and proud to be part of that kind of industry.
I think that's very important. I always say, I also sometimes teach students about TV writing, and I always say, like, yes, we have a responsibility we are, it's different than cinema where people make the choice to pay and go out and, yeah. And go see a movie that can be disturbing or weird or whatever. But when we do TV, we are invited in the living room of people and we are in their home and there's a responsibility that goes to that. But I wanted to continue on that point because I feel like soaps have this, even more than most series, because it's every day, the sense of following the life of people. I do remember when the most successful French soap, now Plus Belle La Vie, which is set in Marseille, started like, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. My family, my grandmother, maybe, but even my parents, my father was like, could not miss an episode. I realized why it was, it was also quite well done, but the simple fact that it was following the life of people, you know, when it's Christmas in real life, it's Christmas in the show. When it's the end of the summer, it's the end of the summer. When there is like an election in real life, there's an election in the show. Where's the, you know, and I'm sure now that most of the soaps in the world have COVID. People have masks. This sense of following the life of people, also the simple fact that you follow actors sometimes for 20 years who, you know, grow old and die on you. No. And that's a fascinating aspect of the soaps, like this idea that you follow day by day, the you mimic the real life and the real rhythm.
This is why the connection to these characters are so strong. So you have such a strong audience. And this is, you know, you'd mentioned two things which are interesting. So the connection is so strong to your characters that you are not able to abstract in your mind that they are just characters. They become your friend. They become your family. So that's kind of your reality. And this is, you know, from a storytelling point of view, that's the biggest challenge, is to create stories over and over and over again that is not destroying these connections. So keep in touch and keep them going and keep them resonating and keep them having, you know, identify with them and keep them loving them. At the same time, coming up this new story so that they are not get bored with their characters. So that's the biggest challenge, to keep your audience connected, because, you know, otherwise your ratings going bad and bye. This, you know, you don't want to be the soap that is canceled after like 25 years. So not just for canceling, just for you. You know, like a person like me, I don't want to disappoint them. So I'm super happy sometimes when people, you know, a friend of mine, he's like 50 something and he's keep texting me, this is a great cliffhanger. So he's watching, like a guy, you know, that's very rare, a guy watching Good Times, Bad Times for like 20 years. And he's so excited that I work there. And so he keep texting me like, this was so beautiful, or this was so fun. I love this. I can't wait to watch this. And so this is the purpose of being a writer, or like especially a head writer and writer producer of TV, daily dramas, to keep this thing alive. And what you just said about COVID, that's super interesting, because I think I can just speak for the UFA serial drama things, but I think in Dohoan, they are not doing it as well.
No, they don't.
COVID is the first thing in real life that is not going on screen. So that was a decision that was made right after COVID appeared, that we are not changing the stories. We are not putting this in the stories and on screen, because we don't know, because no one knew what's going to happen, if it's going to end or not, and how to handle this whole thing. There was of course an overwhelming moment where everyone had to decide what to do. So everyone in the UFA serial drama decided not to do it. And I think there's no wrong and right, but what I'm seeing right now is, of course, the shooting is different. There's no hugging, there's no kissing. nothing, a super challenge for us in the writer's room, because to write stories and come up with images that are related to love and hugging without hugging, without having sex, without kissing, without getting closer. And so I think it feels a little distance when you're watching it, but at the same time, it still keeps the thing going, which is very important for soap operas, is the escapism of you're coming home, you had a stressful day, you're sitting in front of your computer or TV, and you're escaping into the world of your soap opera and having fun, in quotes, with your beloved characters. If we would have bring COVID into on screen, then you can't escape it. So Grey's Anatomy and This Is Us in America, they are the only ones incorporated. This is in different ways. They incorporated in that series. And I think This Is Us did this very beautifully. So very like just a side note, it's just there. But Grey's Anatomy put it in this whole hospital thing. And I can just say for myself, honestly, I'm not watching it right now because I don't want to watch it, because I have this in the news, I have this outside. I don't want to watch this. I really want to escape. And I think that was a smart move from the soap opera, you know, like from the UFO serial drama or Constantine people, to not incorporate it. And I must say, you know, our industry was very challenged in the beginning of the year with COVID. And I'm very proud and I'm very grateful to work in this industry, because they really managed to keep shooting and producing with all the safety measures in place on these high intense pace. So I think Good Times, Bad Times and Alice, no, just missed 1 week or something. That's it. Mm-hmm. And they were so flexible, and we all, I mean, and no one lost their jobs. And in other, you know, in our industry, so many people lost their jobs, so many productions that went on hold, and I wasn't, you know, like our projects, some projects of you and I, were just on hold, and we don't know. And I think I'm so grateful, because it's good for us having jobs, and it's good for the audience to escape in these very challenging times.
And the interesting thing of what you said is it has, for the writers also, you have to be even more creative, because whole, as you said, the whole production process, you have to have the COVID regulations and all that stuff. And most of the times, I mean, that's how I experience it at The Home Is The Home, is that you have, like, for example, you have only a certain number of characters you can use in a specific location, for example.
Yeah.
So if the scene would only work with five characters, for instance, you have to cut it down to three all of a sudden. And that in that you have to be even more creative. And
yeah, there's no party anymore. So
yeah.
That's the only thing that is mirroring our situation, is there's no party, there's no, you know, hugging. And yeah, that's, but I think that's the beauty of being a soap opera writer, because you are so used to restrictions. And I sometimes think that being creative in a restrictive place or world makes you even more creative, because when you work with other writers who are doing a movie and you can do this in every set and every, like, you know, whatever you imagine you can put into your movie, you're coming up, you're always taking the first idea. It's always like, okay, I'm taking an helicopter, and they are like in this super mansion because they are rich. And then you're taking the first idea, and you get used to take the first idea. And the first idea is normally not the best one. You really have to come up with more ideas and really think about it to come up with really creative ideas. And I think this is a plus on soap opera writers as well. They really know to really fight hard for the best idea in a certain way of restrictions. And they are, when you are talking to directors or you're talking to producers in these kind of meetings, which are very, very challenging, because they're coming creative hats on one table and everyone is just like I want to have my idea on top, but at the same time, it's all about money. And the soap opera people, they are more flexible in their thinking. They are much faster saying, okay, we don't have money for helicopters. We don't have money for the mansion. I bet the soap opera writers coming up in 2 seconds with a new idea because they are used to rethink everything and being in an environment of restrictions. And I think COVID made us much even more creative in another way, because how we had this thing like, how do you come up with a love story without having kisses, without holding hands, without having sex, without even standing next to each other, because they have to be 1.5 meters apart from each other on set. And it was so, in the beginning, it was so challenging. And now it's more, we got more used to it and it's more fun. And I think we learned it's all about the characters, and it's not about the sets, and it's not about the helicopter, and it's not about the mansion, it's not about the sex it's that you show. It's all about what your characters are feeling and how they manage to be romantic without, you know, the stuff you usually do. It's again, of course, oh, now you have the kiss. Oh, it's the first idea. So what can you come up with for a love story when they can't kiss? And then it's suddenly a super beautiful story and super romantic, and you never thought that this could be ever romantic. So I think it brings up very new images and stories we haven't seen before.
That's very interesting, and I agree with you on that. This is the great advice for young writers to try to get hired as in a soap writer's room, because
yeah, it's a boot camp. It's a serialized storytelling.
I never did that.
Storytelling boot camp. After that, you can go to Hollywood. You can go to every whatever Netflix series. You can go to all, you know, because you are prepared for everything.
Yeah, because I realized, like, seeing some of my friends who have this experience, and I never looked for it. And I mean, I studied differently. I was a director, but like, still, like, now I realize like some of the skills I miss, or just the fact that you are basically, when you work for a soap, you write hundreds of pages in a year, and while you try to develop your own primetime stuff, you maybe write a pilot every year. You know, like it's not the rhythm of or the pacing of writing, the constraint, the working with actors, seeing what actors do when they receive your lines is something that happens every day, every week in soap. And if you don't work in soap, it can take years to between the moment you write something and the moment actors say it. And I think this.
Or maybe you will never see it.
Exactly.
Because this is what I'm telling my students a lot. It's like, do this. It's the boot camp. And on top of it, you need to have these experience to write your script or write your storyline, see the actors on screen with the music. And of course, it's, you know, if it's not Mad Men, there's not $1 million per episode. Of course, it's cheaper. But you don't see that because that's your characters, that's your lines mainly. And these, as a writer, as a young writer or old writer, you know, like fresh writer, you know, it doesn't depend on the, you know, you can come up to serial drama, soap opera with 50 or 60 and become a new writer. It doesn't matter about the age, but watching your own episodes motivates you so much and keeps you going, because you once, at least once or twice, or like 5 episodes of yours are on screen and you watch it. It's such the greatest moment in the beginning. And I'm seeing the young, fresh writers coming in, like with, you know, like they have like little stars in their eyes and they are so excited about things. I'm not excited anymore. It's so like, yeah, of course, that's my episode. You got so used to it. But I think in terms of how I experience how hard and difficult it is to get your own stuff on screen, I remember myself and, you know, say, be grateful for every episode that's on TV.
Yeah, definitely.
That sounds like a great conclusion. I want to be grateful for what you make on TV.
Definitely.
Well, thanks a lot, Kirsten, for sharing all your knowledge and experience with us.
Thank you for having me and, you know, listening to me.
It was very insightful. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you're welcome.
Well, have a happy new year. All the best wishes.
You too. And have great and healthy holidays.
Yes.
And then we see each other in the new year.
And hopefully at one next, the first film TV festival to exist, basically.
And hopefully in person.
We're going to be all drunk. We only have the parties. We're not going to any screening. We're just hanging out and hugging each other and dancing and having drinks.
Even that crazy writers looking forward to socializing. Yeah. That's
it sounds like an amazing idea. Let's keep that in mind.
Yeah. All right. Have an excellent year and thank you again.
Okay, thank you.
You too. You guys too. Thank you.
This is just a quick word to say thank you to our sponsors that make possible for this podcast to be recorded. So thank you, C21. Actually, we talked about C21 in the discussion with Kirsten. So C21, they are in London, c21media.net. C21 Media is home to the international entertainment community. They're an international publishing company and digital channels business. And they organize many events like this year, Content London, that was online, of course, this year. They've been supporting us from the start. They also now started to work in development. So that's what we learned with Kirsten. And thank you also to Paper to Film, papertofilm.com. It's a French script platform where screenwriters can put their ideas, synopsis, scripts. It's curated, so it's only the best ideas that are on the website, and that's a great way for you to be discovered by a producer or an agent. It was only for the French market at the beginning, but now it's opening. The site is also in English, so it's free for writers to put their first two or three ideas on it. So you have nothing to lose by trying it. So thank you. All right, I think that was a packed episode where we learned a lot that looks good for the new year. Do you have any recommendation, Phil?
Yeah, I found something, or basically I stumbled upon it because I actually found it a while ago. I mean, I'm on Instagram, as many people are, and I stumbled upon the account Screenplayed again, which I think is kind of, I don't know, I found it just really interesting because what they do there is they show you an excerpt of a script, and then they, in the same tiny video or whatever, they show you the scene from the movie, how it turned out at the same time, which I think is, I don't know. So it's a really, really, it's a small thing and it's a small distraction sometimes in the day for me. And I found it really interesting because that's what good. I'm curious about.
It's a great way to see how the script, you know, impacted the results and the work of the writer.
Yes, we're going to put the Instagram account in the show notes. Yes.
Actually,
as well,
it made
for
me
you to check it out.
Lately, for the last few weeks on Instagram, also it's for the French writers or the French listeners, but there was also on Instagram something called Parole de Scénariste, so talk from writer. And basically, it's a lot of mostly anonymous confessions some shitty stuff that happened to writers in this industry.
That sounds amazing.
You know, bad producers, bad directors, bad commissioners, and the way that the work of the TV writers or movie writer is being diminished and not paid and kind of put aside and never like so it's very sobering to read all these bad experiences. I think for some of them it's really clearly the fact that screenwriters are not unified enough and not are not aware enough of the traps, and I think that I hope that, you know, our podcast and the a lot of, you know, screenwriters association can really help make writers stronger and more aware of these problems. But still, it also means that there's still a lot of problem of the consideration of what we do and what we bring to projects. And so I think this account is starting to gather a lot of buzz in France, like in newspapers and all that. So I think it's good. And I think it really shows that, oh, wow, there's a lot of problems. But I think now I'm almost tempted to send this account to some producers I'm working with and think, like, we agree that all of this is shitty, right?
Yeah.
So we will put the link in the show notes for the French speakers of our listeners. It's very interesting. Parole de Scénariste.
What's it called again? Sorry.
Parole de Scénariste.
All right.
And a more fun recommendation. I've been spending a lot of time on a virtual world in a video game on PlayStation 4 called Ghosts of Tsushima. It's kind of a fun open world game set in medieval Japan. You play one of the last surviving samurai after a big Mongol attack on your island, and you basically have to fight back against the invaders. And it's a sword fight and infiltration and open world. It's beautiful. There's also a Kurosawa mode where the game goes into black and white and old time, old school effect to look like a Kurosawa movie. It's very well made. It's very fun. It's not a difficult game. It's quite mainstream, but it's a great escape from our COVID world into I have a lot of fun, killing a lot of people with my swords and learning a lot of stuff. But and I play in Japanese subtitled. It's great. I don't know. It's very immersive. So Ghosts of Tsushima. I think it's only on PlayStation. I'm not sure. The link will be in the show notes. And that's it for this episode of Europudding. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Phil, for this first episode of 2021. Even though we are actually recording still in December.
Don't tell them.
We will be back very soon with more exciting guests. We have a great list of people. That is true. And you can find the show notes and the links of everything we talked about in this episode on our website, europeaning.com, and on your favorite podcast app.
Yes, and as we already said, please tell your friends about us, subscribe and like us wherever you can. Find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just type Europudding. Leave us comments. We love it. And
Happy New Year.
Yes.